sources, that should innately be Army data. We shouldn't have to buy our data back. So these kind of things about the knowledge of best practices in digital world are the things we're getting after on the knowledge end, and probably less more of the commodity management end.
And I would say that, you know, through robotics process automation, two examples on that. We're able to free up our analyst time. Unmatched transactions for us, prioritization of those and solving those. We have our RPA team at FMNC, led by Chase Levinson here. And he's really working to take it to the next level, where we have machine learning paired with RPA so that we can have unattended bots that seek to solve these issues for us, giving Chase then time to do more bots for more people across the United States Army, et cetera. And it becomes a cascading effect. He has a backlog of bots that people want in place for these manual processes. One more example, then I'll get to what the benefit of that is. In the G9 here, we have, as part of the audit compliance and what we're trying to accomplish here, we have to input thousands of records, and it's a manual process, and it's a very similar process every single time. So it's actually a perfect use case for a bot to perform that duty. And our financial information management team has established that, and that's actually inputting those records into our general fund enterprise business system for us. And so what that does is it takes that analyst time and it gives him that time back, so he doesn't have to sit there and manually input that record. And so I've challenged all of the team to then, what do you do with that analyst time at that point? It's not that we're not getting rid of the analyst. Analyst then can seek to solve the root cause issue, where we got there in the first place. He can work with the EBS MFCT to work it into the capabilities requirements document so that we don't end up with that problem in our future capability. There's thousands of labor hours being saved across HQDA right now with these bots. We want people to be problem solvers versus planners. And that's the shift in culture here, where instead of being a guardian of the process and moving things through the process, because that's what you've always done, it's now that knowledge-based employee that we had versus the transactional work that they did previously, because we have systems that can do that for us.
Sort of in some general, right? We don't want to spend labor in collecting data. We want to spend labor on analyzing data. And that's really the shift, is how do we get to the higher end and make the important decision quality data available for analysis and action? And that's really the goal of all these upscale, rescale things throughout the spectrum of work categories.
Greg Garcia, the acting Army CIO, and Jonathan Moak, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Financial Management, are our guests this week. We'll wrap up our conversation on how those two organizations are partnering after one more break. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm Jared Servian. Back on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. As we finish up our discussion with Jonathan Moak, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Financial Management, and Greg Garcia, the Acting Army CIO. As we kind of wind down here in our last few minutes, I want to return to the technology piece a little bit, because we haven't talked much about cloud so far, and whichever direction the Army heads with FM systems, cloud's obviously going to play a big role here. I think you just moved GFEBs to the cloud, which... that was probably a little bit more of a lift and shift than some of the stuff you're hoping to do in the future. But, you know, just as a general matter, how important do you think cloud is going to be in terms of this objective of letting the Army see all of its financial data?
It's going to be the bedrock, right? So the great ability of the cloud, both in compute storage, the innovation cycle of new capabilities in the cloud is going to be huge for us, as across all mission areas. But we have to do that smartly. So, you know, the big push before was cloud first, and basically everybody went to go find their own way to implement cloud technology. What we're really trying to do is have a disciplined, supportive, foundational process for common cloud services and common data services to allow people. So we told people to get out of data centers. What we're trying to say is come to this cloud capability, an ecosystem that has common shared services, common data fabric that allows the functional owner to focus on the function piece, not the technology piece. So for one instance, on the GFIBS migration, we actually provided common cloud services from our C Army capability. And that allowed them to rapidly get to the cloud and save them about $8 million instead of reprovisioning those services for their program. So we're also developing Create, which is a way that a standardized mechanism for cloud capabilities to be built cloud native from the start. Again, taking that digital platform, doing that securely, logically once, and then have people build on top of that their functional uniqueness. So that's the great work of Paul Puckett and the Enterprise Cloud Management Office. That's the great work that we're partnering with AFC on and our ASALT partners to build that common foundation that's scalable, reliable, resilient, secure, and then let functional folks hop on top of that and do their unique functional aspects of that.
Yeah, I would really applaud the team that did that migration for us. I believe it was 44 terabytes of data, something along those lines, across 5 days, I believe. Just what a Herculean effort done by the PEOEIS to move into the cloud environment there. So as the functional lead for FM, I just applaud them for the work. They just did tremendous work in partnership with Netcom and DISA, the PEOEIS and CIO and ECMO, everybody, all hands on deck.
I think that resulted in 2 years of schedule we bought back from that unique partnership of what was planned and then what the collective cross-functional team was able to redefine as far as the process to get there. So a bit of lift and shift, but it's in the cloud now and we can do that next iteration of digital improvement. So getting there allows the ability to reframe and relearn and re-implement as we learn through the process.
Just to clarify in that 2 year point, that's mostly just because you provided a more or less turnkey capability that they could just move into?
Part of that is the resource allocation. We actually had some cloud acceleration money to actually jumpstart that process sooner with the common shared services and with the holistic partnership of a unified vision on that.
Yeah, now we're already seeing dividends. So I applaud OBT too, Robin Swan and his team, because they developed cloud KPIs. And so we're measuring our performance in the cloud. We're seeing tremendous pulling report time to the left. Reports that previously took 180 minutes are happening in 8, 9, 10 minutes now. And I mean, that's just a tremendous increase in our reports. We think it's going to help us here at year-end close. The team, we gave them a goal of getting it done before Q4, because you don't do anything with financial management systems in quarter four. That would be treacherous territory. So they finished it right there at 4th of July weekend for us. They got everything on board, and we're just really very happy functional community. We saw the technology community come on board and really solved a problem for us.
And I think Mr. Moak highlighted, I just want to just one more. The Office of Business Transformation has been a huge positive driving force for all this. So Robin Swan and his whole team have really helped set the vision and we're able to supplement that. But he led that effort. His team led that effort. And it's been very exciting to see those great results. Because we kind of, you know, in the IT world, we promise a lot, right? You're going to get better performance out of the cloud. You don't know if that's really going to happen until it happens. So it's kind of very exciting to have a vision, have a plan, have a team, have it execute and get the results that you were expecting in a very positive fashion. And really, it's a collective huge success for the Army.
I said I was going to finish up on cloud, but I lied. I forgot I wanted to ask you both about the topic that I ask every senior leader about these days, which is telework. How's it been? What was your attitude prior to COVID when it comes to telework? How has it changed, if at all? How productive or not have your folks been in this environment?
My favorite quote is, in the future, telework is just going to be called work, right? To me, I think we've really demonstrated, and the power of partnership and teamwork, I think, is very front and center here. Across the DoD, we recognized a common requirement from the DoD and the services that we need a better platform to implement to allow mission accomplishment with the goals of protecting our workforce, protecting our mission, and helping the whole of nation effort. So we turned to our CVR, which is a Microsoft Teams-based project, and implemented that in about 30 days with iterations of improvement. We have over 1 million people actively using our CVR environment across the Department of Defense. For our Army, that's over 400,000 people that use this capability that was fielded in, again, about 30 days. We are having all sorts of new capabilities by this connectivity of presence awareness, chat, video, and file sharing channels, communities of practice. I would say that, you know, before the idea of, you know, 80% telework was very foreign to Army leaders across the echelons. But what we proved was, A, we can innovate, field, improve without bringing critical cyber risks results, and really to think out through that process. We have soldiers using CVRs for improved mission results in all sorts of ways that would never have been possible if they physically had to go somewhere. We have the ability to touch across the globe in near real time every sergeant's major in the Army to have a collective discussion about important Army issues. So our senior leaders, our commanders, our soldiers, our civilians are all using this capability in new and innovative ways. And I think you can see the results is many things that were planned. There's just a few minor things that really require physical presence that we've not been able to do. A little bit of exercises where you're doing multiple physical things, maybe scaled back. But for the large part, the Army, in addition to our DOD, was able to continue the great work that we're chartered to do.
If I would foot stomp that really quick. Greg summarized that very well. So Greg and I actually worked together at the Information Technology Agency years ago. So he's always been a forward-leaning leader with regard to telework. When I worked there, telework was something that he pushed forward for us. And that was back in 2013, I think, something along those lines. Coming from the private sector, working in an organization at the Army that was a forward-leaning telework type of organization, it was easy transition for me. My staff quickly did it, remarkably. I've said Wes Miller's name several times here. You know, he was a guy that was, he wanted people in the building, you know, and he loves telework now, and he loves Microsoft Teams. In fact, he probably knows how to use the platform better than I do. So I think that you show faith and trust in your employees to know when they need to be in the building for certain in-person meetings or certain activities that they have to perform for us with regard to, right now we're in budget season, we're transforming the program into the budget estimate submission. And so some of those activities require us to be in the building, and it's a little more management for us where we have to measure to make sure we don't go above our threshold of people inside our spaces. So we send some people back home if they're in, as they move out of their busy season, and we bring the budgeteers back in for this part of the year, and then they'll decide when they need to telework. But it's been good. And so I think telework is working very well. The technology supports.
Jared, one thing I would add is the great partnership with the DoD CIO and DISA and the services on classified devices, really, that were secure and able to be the tablets and computers that allowed members of the workforce not to have physically come into the building. This was worked in great coordination with U.S. Cyber, and the cybersecurity aspects were built in, but that really helped our workforce remain outside of the physical requirements of having to travel to and from work. I think the only caution I would say is we've made technology a little bit too convenient in the sense that now many people are struggling with the work-life balance part because they can work from home. And really what we want to emphasize is there's got to be thought in about what we demand from this workforce in a telework environment or a work environment that reminds them that they have to find that balance. They can't just be online for the 14 hours that they're willing to put in. There has to be balance. As you know, we have communities that need our family members. We have families with children that need to take time to. So really this approach to being flexible to that hours and looking for work-life balance has been a very strong point within the Army to find that right match between when you're online to do that work with your additional family, community, and home responsibilities. So that takes balance. But I think that's something I don't want to lose in this conversation, is because the tendency is you can get the technology solved, but you still have to remember that people are people, and we all need to connect on the human level as we do this. to ensure that their needs are being met through this dispersed workforce environment.
Greg Garcia, Jonathan Moak, thanks very much for taking all the time to talk to us today. We've covered a lot of territory in the last 45 minutes or so, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jared. Appreciate it.
Great to be on, Jared. Thanks so much.
And thanks to our listeners for joining us for this week's edition of On DoD. If you missed any part of the conversation, we'll post an extended version of our discussion with Greg Garcia, the acting Army CIO, and Jonathan Moak, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Financial Management, at federalnewsnetwork.com/ondod. You can also find us in podcast form. Subscribe to On DoD on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, or whatever podcast platform you prefer. That's it for this week's edition of On DoD. Thanks, as always, for joining us. I'm Jared Serbia. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD on Federal News Network. Tune in Wednesday mornings at 11 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.